Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 13, 2015. South Sudan's cabinet endorses President Kiir's order to expand the country's states from 10 to 28.
The Council of Ministers applauded the decision of His Excellency the President for further decentralization and adopted the proposed amendment of the Constitution.
And the United Nations mission in South Sudan says its temporary base in Munri is not able to protect internally displaced persons trying to escape fighting there.
It's very hard for us to be able to assist the displaced person close to 1,000 the way we have assisted them in permanent basis.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Regional bloc IGAD says it is concerned at the slow pace at which the South Sudan's peace agreement is being implemented, and the regional bloc is blaming the delays on President Salva Kiir's government and Riek Machar's SPLM in opposition. In a strongly worded memo released over the weekend, IGAD says the failures by Machar's SPLM in opposition to agree to certain security arrangements that were hammered out last month at a workshop in Addis Ababa is partly to blame for the stalling implementation of the peace deal. IGAD also says President Kiir's order to expand the number of states in South Sudan from 10 to 28 is a violation of the peace agreement and also carries some of the blame for slow-moving implementation process. As you probably are aware, IGAD led 19 months of peace talks for South Sudan that resulted in the agreement to end the fighting in South Sudan. IGAD calls in the memo for Machar's rebels to join Mr. Kiir's government and agree to the security provisions that were finalized in Addis. This includes the withdrawal from Juba of all forces and their replacement with a joint force drawn from the government and the SPLM in opposition sides. The regional bloc says that failure to accept the security arrangement will delay the delivery to the people of South Sudan of a peace dividend they deserve after nearly 2 years of conflict. But IGAD has even stronger words for President Kiir's government, saying the decision to reconfigure South Sudan's internal boundaries and expand the number of states directly violates the peace agreement. IGAD says by creating the new states, the government is not only detracting from the role that the transitional government of national unity is supposed to play once it's finally set up, but is also going against the position the government held during 19 months of peace talks. IGAD notes that Mr. Kiir's negotiating team at the talks rejected a proposal by Machar's side to increase the number of states from 10 to 21 and questions why the government is now doing an about-face and embracing something it refused. IGAD says it was agreed at the talks that creating more states and devolving power from the central government to the states is something that should be included in a permanent constitution. One of the main tasks of the transitional government will be to draft that new constitution. IGAD also says the two sides agreed at the talks that new states should be created with the consent and direct participation of the people of South Sudan, not by a presidential order. In the memo, IGAD argues the government of South Sudan to put the order to create new states on hold. It wants that forging ahead with President Kiir's October 2nd order could open, quote, Pandora box of further and endless negotiations on the implementation of the peace agreement, unquote. IGAD also calls in the memo on the international community to give technical and financial support to two sides in South Sudan's conflict as they implement the peace deal. Both Vice President James Waniga and SPLM in opposition leader Riek Machar told us last week during a visit to Washington that they cannot start implementing the peace deal and particularly some of the transitional security arrangements because they do not have the funds to do so. In spite of IGAD's stern criticism of Kiir's order to expand the number of states in South Sudan, Mr. Kiir's cabinet adopted the order during an extraordinary Council of Ministers meeting today. Information Minister Michael Makui says the entire cabinet supports the president's decision to reconfigure the internal map of South Sudan and create new states.
The Council of Ministers applauded the decision of His Excellency the President for further decentralization and adopted the proposed amendment of the Constitution. And this proposed amendment will be tabled soon before the National Legislature for consideration.
Mr. Kiir issued the order establishing the new states nearly 2 weeks ago. The order is supposed to take effect at the beginning of November, 30 working days after it was announced. Waki Simon Wudu contributed to that story. There have been reports of ongoing fighting in Western Equatorial State's Mundri County well after the peace deal was signed by leaders of both warring parties in August. In New York yesterday, Deputy Spokesman for the UN Secretary General Farhan Haq said UNMISS has reported that the town of Mundri is divided between the Sudan People's Liberation Army, or SPLA, and unknown armed militia. UNMISS spokesperson Ariane Quintier in Juba says UNMISS has a temporary operation base in Mundri, which allows UNMISS personnel to observe what is happening on the ground. She says UNMISS patrols in Mundri confirm fighting between SPLA forces and unidentified gunmen. Quintier says the fighting in Mundri town has led to about 1,000 displaced citizens now seeking protection at the UNMISS base in Mundri.
The people are gathering with their own dwellings around a temporary operating base, which by definition is temporary and doesn't have the sort of the kind of facilities that you will have on a permanent base that is allowing UNMISS to have sheltered and protected so many displaced persons.
Quintier says it's impossible for UNMISS to shelter so many displaced people fleeing the fighting in Mundri.
These people are hungry, they seek protection for their lives. Most of them, or half of them, are children. It is a worry, and due to the temporary nature of the base, it is very hard for UNMISS to support and assist these people.
Quintier says UNMISS needs additional financial aid to provide more humanitarian assistance to the displaced.
They are seeking protection with the mission in South Sudan, as almost 200,000 have done in other UNMISS bases, except that in Mundri, what we have is a temporary operating base, which is something extremely basic, with hardly enough for the peacekeepers to be able to live and survive.
Yesterday, Western Equatorial State Deputy Governor Bulen Abiatara Hakim said the humanitarian conditions in Mundri County are getting worse and accused SPLA soldiers of burning civilians' homes and looting their property last week. Kaltuma Vanessa prepared that report in Washington. Meanwhile, in central Equatoria, the Information Minister Emmanuel Adil says officials are stepping up security on highways and in villages in the state after a series of deadly attacks. The most recent attack happened yesterday when a student was killed and three other civilians wounded when the car they were riding in was ambushed on the road linking Juba to Yei. VOA fellow Tito Justin has this report.
Adil did not specify what new security measures are being put in place in the state. He says gunmen have attacked people on roads and in their homes in the recent months. Just last month, more than 6,000 people abandoned Unduruba and Kathigri villages in Lanya County when they were attacked by suspected rebels. The villagers fled to Lanya town. Adil says they are still too frightened to return home.
The actions of those groups of people inflicted fear to our people. So as a government, the government took upon itself by mobilizing non-governmental organizations to give humanitarian assistance or IDPs so that they are resettled.
The International Committee of the Red Cross in South Sudan is trying to help people displaced by the attacks by providing them with items including blankets and mosquito nets. Lawrence Salah is the chairman of South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Lanya County. He says, in spite of the best intentions of organizations like the Red Cross and other NGOs, the help that is being provided to people displaced by the violence in Central Equatorial State is not enough.
I would also ask you, as people of Southern Sudan, should try their level best to push so that you get some assistance for these people, because their conditions are really desperate.
Adil says insecurity in the state is hampering development both locally and in the country as a whole. He pleaded with those responsible for the spate of attacks to stop the killings and focus instead on rebuilding South Sudan now that the country's 20-month conflict is officially over.
Therefore, I call upon all individuals and groups of people in this state who, for one reason or another, a reason known to themselves, are doing this criminal act, to please lay down all their intentions that are criminal in nature, to join the government by ensuring that we become part and parcel of this peace that has been signed by His Excellency the President, which is something we have to support and work for.
Adli says no one has been held responsible for the attacks that were reported in the last 2 months in the state. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
Still in central Equatoria, Juba residents say a fuel shortage is making their lives difficult and very expensive. Many workers have to walk to their offices or use border border to get around, as other forms of transportation have been paralyzed for the last 2 weeks when fuel shortages began. Philip Thornalew reports from Juba on the impact the fuel crisis is having on residents of the capital, what it cost, and when it might come to an end.
Charles Koch lives in the western Juba suburb of Gudele. He works at a private office in downtown Juba, 5 kilometers away from his home. He says seeing the fuel shortages began 2 weeks ago, he has often had to walk to work.
I came to the office very late. I will not be able to run to get, like, if I need something somewhere, nothing will take me quickly. So everything now is affected by this crisis of fuel.
Koi says fuel is hard to find through official suppliers like gas stations, and on the small amount he makes each month, he cannot afford to buy fuel on the black market. He says 1.5 liters of gasoline costs 10 times more today than it did 2 weeks ago.
Imagine this bottle, the Crystal now, this, the so-called Crystal, is 150. Jerkins of benzene, petrol, is 1,400. Only 20 liters, 1,400. So we have to garage all the cars at home, then we use Barbada. Even Barbada has now become more expensive.
Koi says that because Barbada operators have increased what they charge, he is now paying 46 Sudanese pounds to go to the office in the morning and return home in the evening. Daniel Mayen has also felt the fuel price hikes. For the last 4 days, he has been walking the 6 kilometers each way from his home in Kirkat to the bank where he works. His commute used to take 20 to 30 minutes by car. But since the fuel shortages began around 2 weeks ago, he has had to walk, and the walk takes him up to an hour and a half. Mayan says he is expected to be at work at 8 o'clock in the morning.
But it takes me some time, even up to 9, 10, to reach the office. And also it has been hard to get taxis. Even if you get it, you also struggle to fight to get yourself inside the car. So it becomes so hard.
Joseph Chilito is the managing director of the Nile Petroleum, the government-owned entity that is responsible for supplying petrol stations in Juba with fuel. Chilito says the fuel shortage is not the government's fault, but it stems from a supply problem in the country from which most of the fuel that is used in Juba is imported.
There is no petrol there in Kenya. And it is not our problem here in South Sudan, but it is a regional problem. All 5 countries that used to get their petrol from Eldoret are now dry. But we managed to get the number of trucks are on their ways now. Until tomorrow, we'll have 20 trucks of petrol, and it will normalize the situation.
Clinton says new measures, including steep fines, are being put in place to avoid fuel being sold to dealers who end up selling it on the black market, or more specifically, at the side of the road in plastic water bottles at excessively high prices. Mayan is not sure that the 20 fuel tankers promised by Clinto will be anywhere near enough to relieve the suffering of Juba residents.
I don't think, because Juba have many cars, and the number of fuel tanks that used to come to Juba, I don't even know how they disappear, so there's still no hope.
Several gas stations owners declined to speak on the record for this story. Even though South Sudan is a major oil producer. It does not refine its own oil and has to import from neighboring countries. The irony of the crisis in Juba is that while residents of the capital are dealing with the fuel shortage and extreme price hikes, the global cost of a barrel of oil and a liter of gasoline has come down sharply in the last 18 months, partly because of the worldwide oil glut. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a local water bottling company shuts down, saying it needs access to US dollars to stay in business. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how often do you go for a dental checkup, if ever?
I don't remember the last time I went for a dental checkup. I've been to the dentist maybe about twice or thrice in my lifetime.
The answer is no, because according to me, I'm not like these people, the rich people. For them, they have money whereby they can go in the hospital and they check their teeth or other diseases. But for me, I don't have money. That's why they never check my teeth.
I used to go to dental checkup after 6 months in a year. It is very important for the health purposes, in case if there is some thumb disease that implanted into your teeth. It is very important that you go for checkup so that you know what is affecting your teeth.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday's health segment. Today we are talking about mental health. In marking World Mental Health Day last Saturday, the World Health Organization urged governments to protect the human rights and dignity of people with mental health disorders who suffer from stigma, discrimination, and wide-ranging abuse. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Hundreds of millions of people globally suffer from mental health problems. The World Health Organization reports the mentally ill account for 13% of the global disease burden and for one-third of all health-related disability. Studies in the United States, Britain, and Ethiopia show people with serious mental illness are dying 10 to 20 years earlier than the general population. WHO Mental Health Coordinator Michelle Funk says people with mental health problems often are shunned and neglected. She says the services they receive for their condition are generally inadequate and almost universally brutal. She says they are stripped of their human rights and dignity, elements essential for their recovery.
What we see instead is that people admitted to inpatient facilities throughout all countries in the world are exposed to violence, sexual abuse. They're restrained, they're tied down, they're left without food and water, forced to live in extremely dirty and unhygienic conditions, and simply forgotten about for years and sometimes for the rest of their life.
She notes this is a common situation in both developed and developing countries. Dr. Funk says people with mental disabilities frequently are locked up in institutions where they are isolated from society and subject to inhuman and degrading treatment. She says they often are deprived of the right to make decisions for themselves, lack access to education and employment opportunities. She says people with mental illness are set apart from the general population and are prevented from participating fully in society. The World Health Organization says poor quality care due to a lack of qualified health professionals and dilapidated facilities leads to further violations. The agency is running an awareness campaign aimed at dispelling the many myths and erroneous assumptions of the mentally ill. The WHO says many people with mental disabilities can recover if treated by trained health professionals who respect the needs of their patients and include them in the decisions that affect their lives. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The third water bottling company, which has been providing clean drinking water to Jonglei State residents since it opened 3 years ago, has been forced to shut down operations. Officials say they had to close because they cannot access foreign currency to buy raw materials from Dubai. For VOA News, Jacob Achek reports from Bor.
Surwater Bottling CEO Jose Majurakoi says the company officially shut down operations a month and a half ago, although about a dozen employees remain at the plant who maintains the company's equipment. Akoi says the water bottling company will stay closed until they are able to get holds of U.S. dollars and letters of credit so they can purchase raw materials.
They shut down now because of scarcity of dollars. We were not given LCs when the companies were given LCs by the state.
Well, these LCs were meant to be given to water factories, but it appeared that, you know, it went to individuals. And then with the business community did not get it.
Akoi says he has asked Jonglei state authorities why his sewer water did not get a letter of credit. He is yet to receive an answer. Sewer water bottling company was opened in October 2012 by the Jonglei state government to reduce the cost of bottling water and create employment opportunity for local citizens. From the beginning, the company produced 80,000 bottles of water per day, but they quickly increased to 160,000 bottles of water a day due to a high demand. Until its closure, Sewer Water sold 600 milliliters of water to retailers for 70 piastres. Retailers then sold the water to consumers for 1 South Sudanese pound per bottle. Now, water costs up to 5 South Sudanese pound in shop and restaurant in and around the state capital, Bor. A 1.5 liter bottles we used to cost 2 South Sudanese pound now sell for 8 South Sudanese pound. Mayor Nial Majak Nial says closing Sewer Water Bottling Company has hurt the local economy.
It contributes to high prices of water. That is why the price of water is going up in Bor. And the 600 milliliter seller is £4. A lot of steps should be done as with a holistic approach as the people of South Sudan so that we can improve our economy by making every step that is possible for us to encourage local production.
John Mayola Nial, who works for the local NGO, Ismail Again Africa Development Organization, call on the government to do everything in its power to enable local businessmen the access they need to use dollars to prevent more business from going under the sending commodities price is skyrocketing.
Personally, as a person who used to buy this water in the market, I have reduced the number of liters that I could drink in a day, simply because I can't afford.
Bor resident Malual Abraham Atanj blames state government official for Sewer Water shutdown, saying they mismanaged letters of credit. He says people are now forced to drink unsafe water.
We ordinary citizens, we are actually leaving the factory water and we are using water for the borehole and the river because we don't have money. The population is poor.
Akoi says his company had laid off more than 80 employees. Only 12 remain on the job, but they too could be sent home seeing the company is not generating any incomes. Laid-off farmer, staff supervisor John Akui Ding says he cannot longer take care of his family.
When food bottling working, I get some salaries that's supporting my family.
Ding says for 2 months, other family members have had to take care of his family. Akoi says if he can get an LC, he can reopen the company. The company is a shared business between the state government and a private company called Joint Access Kilowatt Technology, and it is only water bottling factory in Jonglei. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek reporting from Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of our today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus, editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. IGAD says implementing the South Sudan peace agreement is taking too long. It blames the delays on President Salva Kiir's government and Riek Machar's SPLM in opposition group. IGAD, which brokered the talks in Addis Ababa, says in a memo that the failure of Machar's SPLM IO to agree to security arrangements in Juba is partly to blame. IGAD also says President Kiir's order expanding the number of states to 28 violates the peace agreement and has slowed things down. IGAD chastised Machar, but was even more critical of President Kiir, saying the decision to reconfigure the country's internal boundaries directly violates the peace deal and should not have been handled through a presidential order. Mr. Kiir's cabinet adopted the order today. Central Equatoria Information Minister Emmanuel Adil says officials are setting up security on highways and in villages after several deadly attacks there, the most recent being yesterday when a student was killed and three other civilians were wounded. The car they were riding in was ambushed on the road linking Juba to Yei. Adil did not elaborate on the new security measures being put in place to prevent more violence in the state. Just last month, more than 6,000 people abandoned villages in Lenya County when they were attacked by suspected rebels. And finally, more fighting is being reported in western Equatoria State's Mundri County. In New York yesterday, Deputy Spokesman for the United Nations Secretary General Farhan Haq says, according to UNMISS, the town of Mundri is divided between the SPLA and unknown armed militia. UNMISS spokesperson Arian Quintier in Juba says UNMISS has a temporary operating base in Mundri, and personnel there confirm that ongoing fighting is occurring between SPLA forces and unidentified gunmen. She says the fighting in Mundri has led to close to 1,000 displaced citizens seeking protection at the temporary UNMISS base in Mundri. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Sudan Jadid by Nyankol Matiang. We have been listening to Nyankol Matiang with the song Sudan Jadid as she praises the leaders of SPLM. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.